As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On BSB OT Some Number, Gregory and I back on a Wednesday night after Alain Vigneault and the Flyers take the Rangers 4-3 in a game where Chris Kreider scores a hat trick, Igor Shesterkin gets absolutely peppered and destroyed. Strome does exactly what he always does. Mika Zibanejad continues to pay tribute to Rick Nash, and here we are.
Boy, you gotta. I don't accept your Rick Nash.
Listen, it's very clear at this point. But
it's very clear Mika, at this point that I'm going to end up killing you.
Mika really needs to learn something other than the backhand. It seems like they figured that one out, Mika. Maybe you do another move at this point. I don't blame Mika for the first breakaway, just to be clear. It was a wobbling puck. It's fun to poke fun at him, but he did look a lot like himself tonight, to be honest, for the most part.
Here's the thing. With Mika, I don't think it's us poking fun. It's kind of heartbreaking how snake-bitten he is. Strome, it's poking fun.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's failing at a level that is only comical. Zibanejad's failing at a level that is more tragic than comical. It's not like Zibanejad is missing open nets. It's not like his stick is disintegrating every time he touches the puck. Zibanejad is getting the quote-unquote good looks, but he's just not finishing. Some of it is his fault, but some of it is just bad luck. With Strome, it seems like there's a question of talent involved in what he does. But with Mika, it's heartbreaking.
It's so funny because Ryan Strome has been like semi-good all year. He's actually been pretty productive for the most part, and he has a lot of great plays, but then when it comes to the, like, hey, that's a wide open net, should I hit that? He just can't do it. I don't know why
he's getting to a point now where he's just constantly making the bad decision too. He's making an extra, like, it was Georgiev that told him in practice to stop making the extra pass and just shoot the damn puck, and it feels like Strome took that advice as a challenge to not just make the extra pass, but make the least successful opportunity pass now too. It boggles the mind what Ryan Strome does. The joke's literally right. It's gotten to a point where I don't have good jokes for Ryan Strome. It's essentially just typing his name and maybe putting in a different emoji.
I saw a lot of people on Twitter who, because we're kind of out of the Ryan Strome jokes, all of us, it's kind of like, hey, their jokes write themselves, right? That's what you have to say now when Ryan Strome does anything. Yeah, jokes write themselves. What else can you do? That's it. There's nothing else. All the jokes are done. You know what's interesting about tonight's game, Greg? And people will get angry at me super right away. I'm going to give some credit to David Quinn.
Oh, God.
I know. I'm sorry. The team... I know there are plenty of things you can make fun of David Quinn for tonight. Really, the team looks undisciplined. Some of the shifts are bad, but the results are very similar. He is consistent. Just no matter who's on the ice or not, the Rangers have been in pretty much one goal or game winning situations or game tying situations all season. No Truba, no Hedl, no Kako, no Miller. Jack Johnson out there, Potato and Hayek just swimming along, paddling, trying to survive at this point in time. And somehow David Quinn gets this team, and tons and tons, and all the credits of Chris Kreider and Mika Zibanejad and Ryan Strome, who set Chris Kreider up for these goals. Chris Kreider had 3 yards worth of three goals tonight, or rather 1 yard worth of three goals. But credit where credit is due for David Quinn. He went like this. This team is still somehow so close to winning when they have absolutely no business right now competing at any level.
I'm going to clap back a little bit.
Go for it, please.
Because while you're trying to give credit to David Quinn, I need to give credit to Alain Vigneault. Because tonight's game
such an AV game,
the most Alain Vigneault game I think I've ever seen in my entire life. The Flyers were the superior team for the majority of the night. The Rangers were without five of their best, seven players for the entirety of the game.
Their best two forwards, their second best defender, their third best defender.
They're without their entire second pairing.
Yes.
And it's not just that the Rangers were without their entire second pairing. It's that the Rangers were playing with four defenders named Jack Johnson, Brendan Smith, Anthony Petetto, and Lieber Hayek. They're without Panarin, their best player, flat out. They're without Hedl, their second best center, and their most consistently producing center. They're without Kako, who has been either their third best winger of the year or second best winger this entire season. The Rangers had no business being in this game. And it looked like the Rangers had no business being in this game in the first period. But Alain Vigneault looked like he wanted the Rangers to be in this game more than the Rangers wanted to be in this game. The Flyers coming out to start the third period and completely turtling and essentially trying to just not lose.
Not fun
to
watch.
Was the most AV thing I've seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
If I was a Flyer fan, I'd be sick of that entire game. I would not be. If we were on this podcast, if this was a Flyer podcast, first of all, I'd be like, blah, blah, blah. Life is terrible. I hate everything because I'm a Flyer fan. And then second thing.
Good impression.
Would be we'd be just bitching and moaning about how you can't even be happy about this win because the Flyers didn't want it. They didn't want it. I don't know how else to describe it. The Rangers took what I think was, I should look it up, but it's at least five penalties the Rangers took. They had a 1 minute and 38 seconds, five on three,
yes.
In which for the first 40 seconds of that five on three, two of the three Rangers on the ice were Brett Howden and Jack Johnson. Jack Johnson, who, by the way, decided just to take a seat for that entire shift. He was just on the ice.
Hey,
for reasons.
Can you argue with the results?
Can't
you can't argue with them. They didn't score.
Because they weren't generating results. It's just like the Flyers were so mesmerized by Jack Johnson literally sitting down that they were like, wait, no, we can't shoot the puck at Jack Johnson, right? This must be a cheat code of some kind. He's doing something here. He wasn't doing anything. The Flyers, I honestly understand that we lived through years. What, three of the half of this podcast lifetime was spent with Alain Vigneault?
Alain Vigneault.
And some of our best rants are Alain Vigneault related.
We were big Fire AV guys. I was the
big
last
Fire
person.
AV.
I was, to be fair, I was the last person on that train. I really
you
was.
You were. I was on that train the day they signed the extension.
Yeah, you were.
But that game was just the most Vigneault game, I think. Even Vigneault at his Vigneault-est with the Rangers didn't get to this level of Vigneault that he got to tonight. It was masterful. So while you want to give credit to David Quinn for keeping the Rangers involved in this game, some credit deserves to go there. But to me, this was just a masterclass of Alain Vigneault's ineptitude as a head coach in the National Hockey League.
Isn't it funny, though, like how sometimes I don't know what coaches do in the NHL, as crazy as that sounds. I just don't know. Like when Jacques Martin comes in here, our penalty kill looks entirely different than it looked last year. It's night and day. I don't understand. Obviously, the coaching is working. But Alain Vigneault, no matter where he goes, that same style of turtle in the third period hockey, which is it's kind of the James Harden, the regular season style of hockey that allows you to succeed. It follows him everywhere he goes, no matter the talent he has. It must be his structure or the way, whatever he's doing. But it is insufferable to watch as a fan if you are a Flyer fan. And pretty fun for a Ranger fan like us. We got to relive it, unfortunately, but to watch it from the other side, you could tell they were turtling, and that's exactly what they were. If Mika could finish on one of those breakaways, there were definitely opportunities for the Rangers to game.
Blackwell left two on the doorstep.
That's for sure.
Like if Blackwell finishes one of those two,
if Panera's in this game, they win. I'm sorry, like they do.
So I have a hot. I don't know if this is a hot take, but I think in context, this is an important take. I think it was clear that the New York Rangers missed Keandre Miller tonight more than they missed Artemi Panarin.
Well, yeah, that's not that hot of a take, I don't think.
Yeah, because again, the difference It's not that Panarin is a Keandre Miller's not a better player than Artemi Panarin.
That's not what you're saying at all. No, I know what you're saying.
But the Rangers, even with Mika Zibanejad at his coldest, all it needs is for Zibanejad and Kreider to get cooking, which they were tonight, and you can kind of sort of make up for what Artemi Panarin does in the offensive zone. But you simply can't put Jack Johnson in for Keandre Miller and expect things to be hunky-dory. And Johnson had horrific moments tonight, but we've been pretty positive or kind to Lieber Hayek since he's come back into the lineup.
The Hayek, yes.
Tonight was a night where the Rangers needed Hayek to step up and be more than just serviceable, and he just dropped the ball, be it on the penalty kill that directly led to a goal, or him and Boteto. The Boteto turnover late in the third period that eventually resulted in a penalty. Both of them were just – that's why – good teams don't have third pairings that are Hayek and Boteto. And that's why if you're the New York Rangers and you're down defensemen like they are, sure, I don't think there are very many teams that could survive without their entire second defensive pair, especially when that second defensive pair is also integral to their penalty kill. And in the case of Jacob Trouba, also a part of their power play. But
I mean, let's be honest, Miller was part of the power play too.
Exactly, because he was the backup to Trouba. And
he was also getting power play time when Trouba was around.
I'm not trying to suggest that any team can survive without two significant injuries like that defensively, but this goes to a larger point with the New York Rangers where their depth at defense is just not good enough. And we've learned a lot about Lieber Hayek, where we feel pretty confident if Hayek is your one of your bottom pairing defenders or your seventh defenseman, basically only using him in sheltered situations, he can be fine. But a night like tonight where you don't have any other choice but to expose Lieber Hayek to a fairly talented hockey team, he gets eaten alive. And this is the lesson. We felt we knew this lesson. We were pretty sure we knew this lesson. And this I don't want to come off as a guy that's overreacting to one game, all that nonsense. But the proof is in the pudding when you really look at it. We have enough evidence with Lieber Hayek where I'm fairly confident he can't be in your bottom pair. And he can't be a guy in your bottom pair that has to be elevated if injuries do happen. The Rangers need to do more, whether that's Tarmo, we don't know, whether that's guys like Zach Jones in the future, we don't know, whether it's the Rangers just doing the simple things, Ryan, like signing veteran defensive depth, actual playable defensive depth, like the John Merrills of the world.
I think Hayek was legitimately going to be an eighth or ninth defenseman. And unfortunately, due to the Tony situation, due to the Trouba injury, due to literally everything else that's happened, Keandre Miller being out, Hayek is here. Now, your depth on this is the failure, and this is not going to be a surprise to anybody listening at home. The failure is signing Jack Johnson to above the minimum. That's the failure. And that
it doesn't help, that's for sure.
No, it doesn't help. That means your bottom four. Like, hey, Boteto, I think that was a good signing. I think you and I could agree. Like, what he's done so far. What he's done so far is good. Was Merrill a better option?
I'll push back, Ryan, a little bit on the good talk. Okay. I think Boteto has been as much of what we could have asked him to be. The expectations for Boteto were extremely low, and he hasn't been worse than those expectations. But I do think when the Rangers signed Boteto, there were clear holes in his game too. And it's not like
Rangers had no other choice. I'm not worried about him. You know what I mean?
You should be worried. What you should be worried about is how the New York Rangers are evaluating these depth defensemen.
I guess I am worried a little bit about that, mostly because of Jack Johnson.
Boteto was ranking as one of the worst defensemen as well coming out of last season. So it's almost like if you want to say Jack Johnson, the Rangers ignored the analytics with him because he had history with Martin. He has history with John Davidson. He had history with all these guys, and the Rangers felt his locker room presence was going to bring something to this team. If you want to make the argument that the Rangers ignored his metrics for all that off the ice stuff, you can't make the same argument for Anthony Boteto, who was, I think, in the bottom 10 in defensive responsibilities last year.
That's fine.
His numbers were almost as bad.
Yeah, I guess if that's the case, I cannot make that case for Anthony Boteto. Maybe they saw something that we didn't. Maybe their stats brought out something that we didn't see. There's very unlikely, to be honest with you. I understand that. But for what Boteto is, and maybe there was better depth signings, that's not something I'm freaking out about. I'm really not. The thing I would be freaking out about, and I still am, is the Jack Johnson signing, because that's a guy that's supposed to be, that's a person you should be having in depth that should be able to play significant second line minutes if an injury like this occurs to Keandre Miller or Jacob Trouba. And we do not have that player. There's no one there. Maybe Tarmo is the answer. Right now, Greg, that's the only answer available to us. I don't think there's even another option because of all the defensemen we've gone through this year. If you don't
bring... That's unfair, and that's quite honestly unfair to Tarmo.
Super.
Which is... That's the other element of this, where the Rangers, again, we don't really consider the Rangers a playoff team this year. If they were fully healthy, we thought they would be frisky, which they have been so far this season. But when four of your defensemen are guys like Smith and Johnson and Boteto and Hayek, forget about it. You're essentially just hoping and praying that a team capitulates like the Philadelphia Flyers did tonight. It's unfair to then say, well, this is the role we need Tarmo Runanen to play this year, his first true exposure to North American hockey. That's, again, bad planning. And it's not David Quinn not giving certain players a chance here. That's roster construction and organizational depth. That goes a level beyond David Quinn's pay grade. We're now asking questions about Jeff Gorton that we've asked before. We've had questions about how the New York Rangers evaluate defensemen. Those questions aren't being answered. They're just being more loudly spoken at this point in time. And again, this isn't entirely fair. The Rangers are essentially playing without half of their opening night six defensemen. They're playing with, and it's not like the Rangers lost their bottom pairing defensemen. They lost Tony D'Angelo, Keandre Miller, and Jacob Trouba.
That's serious talent, dude.
Yeah, and Miller and Trouba were playing so well that this can't be ignored to a certain extent. But this is what happens when you don't bring in the necessary pieces to give yourself options. Like you said, this is why the Jack Johnson signing is as bad as it was, because not only is it keeping a more talented player off the New York Rangers roster, it's putting you in a situation where you have no choice but to play an absolute zero. Well, and then it capitulates when you have Anthony Boteto, because it's another problem where, sure, if Boteto's the emergency guy to plug into your bottom six because you've had three injuries on your defense, okay, that's fine. That's not the end of the world. But the problem is he was the seventh defenseman. The part of the plan was for the Rangers to play Anthony Boteto in certain situations.
Three games was the plan.
Well, it's three games that the Rangers were essentially throwing away.
It's tough. I
don't think either of us went into this podcast expecting to go on.
One more point about Jack Johnson and why it's so goddamn bad. It's because when you sign Jack Johnson to a contract like that, at least you can say, okay, if we're bad, we can at least recoup some value for the money we're spending on Jack Johnson and trade him. Oh, but it's Jack Johnson, so you cannot recoup that value by trading him for a third or fourth round pick, because I don't think a veteran team is going to trade for Jack Johnson. And if they do, God bless Gorton. Top to bottom. We'll be right back. We're taking a break. Transition.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, we're back. That was enough of potato. That was enough of potato talk for me for the next 2 weeks. I guess the one thing we should say is I was really impressed by Chris Kreider tonight, because not only because he scored 3 goals on 1 yard worth of actual puck movement, but because it looked like the Chris Kreider of old. And what I mean by that is it's a guy who clearly saw that all the talent was down and knows he's been invisible and has been a notorious slow starter every single year we've done this show, maybe every single year he's been in the NHL, and was able to come out, sort of act like a captain, and provide the results. You know, he put himself in the right position every single time. Obviously, he was able to stand in front of the net. He's gigantic and he's fast, and that's Chris Kreider to a T. And I'm really impressed, because earlier today he was playing piano, and it was just sort of like serenading himself right into saying, hey, I'm back. Chris Kreider, it's time to heat up. And that's exactly what we saw tonight.
Yeah, the Rangers needed offense to step up. And we knew, we said this on Monday, the guys whose responsibility it would be to step up in these games. It's, as much as we've enjoyed Colin Blackwell, it's not his job to carry this team, nor should it be the expectation. The workhorses the Rangers still had in this lineup were Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. They needed them to step up, and Kreider stepped up in a massive way. Kreider led this team by example tonight, and the Rangers desperately needed it. And it was great to see. Was it enough? No, because, again, the Flyers should have scored about 8 goals in this game, and Igor Shesterkin did everything in his power to try to steal this one from Philadelphia. The Rangers defensively weren't going to be able to keep up with the Flyers, but they made this a game more than it ever should have been, and credit where credit is due for that. If you told me before this game started that the Rangers would lose 4-3 and would be super competitive for the last 2+ periods of it,
I'd sign up for it.
I'd sign up for it. For real. That would be, again, I hate that it feels like every time we come on this podcast, I can't remember the last time we did a BSBOT after a win. I'm sure one exists, but it doesn't feel like
happened. It's, I don't think it's happened.
No, I think it happened.
Capitals?
Who did they play before? No, they played the Capitals over the weekend, and then didn't they beat the Flyers last week? Before we did an OT?
Maybe, but it felt like didn't the Flyers...
Like was that the 2-1 game?
That's correct. It was close to that. But I know all the weeks blend together at this point. But the Flyers at that point had no talent whatsoever in the Rangers
won. But the Kako game.
Yeah, that's correct.
We did an OT after that game.
Yeah, that's true.
We were, I think, happy back then.
Yeah, back last week, 7 days ago. The Rangers are about to go into a skid where they're going to play the Bruins twice over the weekend. Now...
there's a chance there. Here's the other thing we should really... talk about. Unfortunately, I know the reason why. It's a nationally televised game. That's the reason why. The San Jose Sharks have a player that enters COVID protocol today. They cancel their game tonight. The Rangers have a player that enters COVID protocol
that's
today.
Quite interesting.
They don't, again, I understand as I'm saying this, the answer to this question is nationally televised. But a good argument could be made that this game tonight should not have been played. And if this game wasn't on NBCSN tonight, I don't know if this game would have been played. When Kako went on the list, he went on a day before the game. He went on a practice day. Keandre goes on a game day.
15 minutes before.
The question should be asked. There just needs to be consistency with what the NHL is doing.
I guess.
And we're awfully confused about what the hell that is.
Right. I don't know how to excuse any of this or really how to make sense of it. My guess in this situation would be they might know that it was a contact tracing situation. And if that was the case, you're probably right. I'm just saying this. This is my opinion. They could know it's a contact tracing situation where Keandre was in contact with somebody. Maybe he tested negative, but they still wanted to hold him out in that way. We don't know. We won't know. And hopefully nothing more comes of this and there's not any more cases on the New York Rangers moving forward. Now that is Kako and Miller so far. Obviously everyone played tonight, so if there's another case, I think we're in for a rude awakening here as New York Ranger fans, but let's hope that none of that happens.
We should also point out that Hedl was on the list, is now off.
He is now off. That is correct. And I know he's a couple weeks away at this point in time from returning.
I don't know if Quinn didn't make it sound like weeks. He's skating now, but I don't know. The Rangers are always bad with timelines. We know that the 4-week mark is past. So technically we are in the window of opportunity here with Filip Hedl. We also know David Quinn will not put him back into a lineup without seeing him in practice. So Filip Hedl will need to do a full round of practice before we see him playing hockey again. When that is, we don't know. We'll never know. We'll know when it happens. It's tough. Back to your point about Kreider and Zibanejad, which is what we were talking about before we got sidetracked. It was also great to see that the Rangers power play was able to do anything without Artemi Panarin. And I understand the gripes that people have. The one gripe I accept when it comes to Alexi Lafreniere's ice time, especially in a game like today. And honestly, I've just seen enough of Ryan Strom on the first power play that I just don't want to see it anymore. The only avenue of complaint that I will accept when it comes to Lafreniere's ice time is he needs to be getting more power play time, because we would think a player of his skills, we know he's immensely talented, would benefit from getting to play man advantage minutes, especially if he's playing with guys like Kreider, Zibanejad, Panarin, and Fox when everybody's fully healthy. But especially when you don't have Panarin, especially when you don't have Kako, like there really isn't a reason to have Colin Blackwell on the top power play line and Ryan Strome on the top power play line than Alexi Lafreniere. So I want to say it, that that's the one complaint I completely understand and totally get. And this comes down to the point where I can't sit here and say, well, he's getting time in the second power play unit, because unlike any other year with David Quinn, he's playing his top power play unit for at least a minute 15 of every 2-minute power play.
It's not even.
So that second power play unit is almost non-existent.
The second power play unit usually gets 20 to 28 seconds worth of actual offense to do something, because it's usually on a shift change, and then that's when they get there.
And honestly, fair play there by David Quinn. David Quinn's like, you know what? I have Artemi Panarin, I have Mika Zibanejad, I have Chris Kreider on a man advantage. I'm just going to leave them out there on the ice, because something good is probably going to happen with those players out there. I don't have a problem with that strategy. If he wants to overload his first power play unit with minutes, I'm all for that. My problem tonight is I don't think you can look me in the eyes and say the Rangers power play is, again, bad example for this because Chris Kreider scored twice on the power play. But in principle, just because it works doesn't mean it's a good idea. You can't sit here and tell me that Ryan Strome and Colin Blackwell, God bless Colin Blackwell, future captain of the New York Rangers, guy who's going to have to be protected in the expansion draft.
Might actually have to be protected, by the way, yes.
Yeah, no, legit protected. There's no way you can expose Colin Blackwell at this point in time, because the Kraken, if they're smart, would eat him up.
Right.
But with that being said, just no excuse for me to have Strome and Blackwell on that unit when you don't have Kako, when you don't have Panarin. I don't accept the argument for when the team is fully healthy. I can see hundreds of reasons why Lafreniere doesn't get top power play minutes when everyone is out there. But on a night like tonight, when you don't have Panarin and you don't have Kako, it's kind of unacceptable.
I'm with you. The one thing I'll say about the only counterpoint I really have to this, and I want Lafreniere, the first overall pick, who's supposed to be this dynamic offensive generator out there on the first power play. I think he kind of had these power play lines at least set from the last game of putting Strome and Blackwell up on the top line and giving Blackwell these opportunities because he's performed. We've seen it over and over again with David Quinn. He loves, if someone has performed, at least in his eyes, he loves to reward them. And I don't know, that's not the case with Strome, but that's the case with Blackwell. Now, should Blackwell be up there right now? Maybe not. It probably should be the more talented hockey player in Lafreniere in
the
long term.
Well, on a night like tonight, though, you can keep Blackwell on that top unit and still have a spot for Alexi Lafreniere.
What I'm saying is I don't think he goes away from Strome because David Quinn trusts his vets in that way. Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, and Ryan Strome. He trusts those guys. There's no doubt about it. And that's why they stay on the first power play, even if Strome is a walking nightmare when it comes to empty nets. That's just how he's trying to win games. And I know how crazy this sounds, but like he's not looking at this as what is the long-term development for Alexi Lafreniere and how do I get the most out of him in this situation? Is that a problem? Yeah, it possibly is. But David Quinn is looking at this situation as, hey, another really great coach just got fired in Montreal today. Coaches get fired all the time. And if I don't win, we can argue about great coach, but I'm just saying what he thinks. Yeah. You know, so that
I want to argue about yes. it because I don't think he's that great.
I agree with you. But David Quinn, to finish my thought here, Greg, David Quinn sits out there and says, I need to win because I'm watching coaches get fired all the time. And the way to do that is to trust my vets who I've seen perform in Ryan Strome, in Mika Zibanejad, in Chris Kreider on the power play. And I'm not going to trust my job to a struggling first overall pick who I believe will be a great hockey player, but can develop in quote unquote other ways. That's all.
Now, I'm going to counter you a couple ways. I'm not even going to get into the Claude Julien bag of worms that you opened up there. Yeah. I think Julien seems like he's entering the Jacques Martin part of his coaching career where you shouldn't trust him to be a head coach, but he makes for a very intriguing assistant. That's the nicest thing you'll hear me say about Claude Julien. I do think David Quinn is playing the long game with Alexi Lafreniere. I think that is a constant strategy that he's trying to deploy with Lafreniere. What I would say is I don't think David Quinn allows 2 minutes of ice time a night to be the determining factor in whether Alexi Lafreniere will be a good NHL player or not.
We are locked up in
that. I agree with that. I think Alexi Lafreniere is not developing well enough because he's averaging 13 minutes a night as opposed to 15 minutes a night. I think that's ridiculous. I would agree with you there, and I think David Quinn would agree with us there. It doesn't matter how much ice time Alexi Lafreniere gets. What matters is what he's doing with the ice time that he has. That's how a player develops. I'm not saying the 2 minutes Lafreniere extra would get a night on the power play is crippling his development. Wouldn't say that. I think that's ridiculous. I think anyone who believes that is getting a little bit too lost in the weeds in their own argument in that point in time. But what I would say in this instance is, one, we've seen David Quinn take Ryan Strome off the top power play unit before. He's done it this season, and he replaced Strome with Lafreniere when he's done it. So my question is, I would love to know why he keeps going back to Strome, why Strome continues to be the guy that is getting these opportunities with that line.
I'm not allowed to tell you the reason, Gregory. I swore I wouldn't speak it on this podcast.
I know. And all we can do is sit here and say what our opinions are, because those are all they are. They are just opinions.
Hell yeah.
But the thing I would push back on when you said David Quinn isn't worried about Alexi Lafreniere's development and he's only worried about winning and losing games, I disagree there. I think David Quinn is super worried about Alexi Lafreniere's development because David Quinn is a smart enough man to realize he's going to need an elite level Alexi Lafreniere if he ever wants to win a Stanley Cup. Yeah, and the only way he's going to get that Alexi Lafreniere is by continuing to put Lafreniere in situations that he feels is advantageous for Lafreniere. What I think you were trying to say, and I don't like putting words in your mouth, though I do it all the time.
That's correct.
I don't think ice time on a given night is what determines whether Alexi Lafreniere is developing.
Correct.
Whether Lafreniere gets 18, if Lafreniere gets 18 minutes a night and they're bad minutes, is that better than him getting 11 minutes a night and they're solid minutes and he's playing well? I don't know. I don't fucking know. I know that Quinn has little missions he wants Lafreniere to accomplish when Lafreniere is getting ice time. And I think Lafreniere is accomplishing those little missions all while not scoring 700 points that people thought he would have by the 15-game mark of his career. I will need someone to explain to me why a player getting 15 minutes as opposed to 13 minutes is just so much better for their development. All while saying, again, I the whole reason we got on this talking point is because I feel Alexi there's no reason to keep Ryan Strome on a power play unit above Alexi Lafreniere. There's just none. And we said this last year about Kapokako. We probably said this previously about Filipetal. Hell, we probably even said it once or twice about Elias Anderson. It's it's strange.
What's up with Leas these Strome, days?
I don't fucking know. Nor do I care. I saw, by the way, that Zuccarello has 8 points in his last four games.
Oh my god, I miss him. And I, you know what? And my last point of this OOT. It is such an absolute, because we didn't even get to talk about it on Monday's podcast, which, by the way, thank you all for the kind words. We've got a lot of nice messages and responses for that podcast. It is so upsetting as a person who owns a lot of stock in Capo Caco, a literal ton, maybe the most of anybody, that to have him go into the COVID protocol during this time when he is playing, was playing at a different level. I really felt like this next level of Capo Caco was coming. He was hitting his strides. The confidence was there. There was so much happening. And for this to happen now is just an absolute bummer. And it's maybe the fifth biggest story of the week now. It's unbelievable. I hope he's back sooner than later. I hope he's healthy. And I hope the same thing for Keandre Miller at this time. We can see the edge of the woods, Greg. The vaccines are coming, my friend. So let's get them soon enough.
The situations that would have to happen for Capo Caco getting COVID and being put on the COVID list all while he was playing easily the best hockey of his career, for that not to be the biggest story that we talk about all week long, I would have said Vladimir Putin would have had to threaten Artemi Panarin with his life in order for us to not talk about Caco all
That's
the time.
Exactly it. And
so props, I guess.
Yeah. Greg, I edited the podcast on Monday very delicately because, you know, mm-hmm. delicate topic. You have to re-listen and go through things and make sure everything's good. And we talked for Capo Caco for under 30 seconds. That's unbelievable.
We didn't even get to spend 15 minutes on how the NHL thinks the sun isn't hot.
Yeah. That's when we're at our best.
that's our peak. We said this Monday, we've said this online all the time. We didn't get into hockey podcasting to talk about geopolitical friction in the Eastern Bloc.
We got to talk about scientific global warming and melting of ice. That's why we started hockey podcasts.
And to talk about the Mets. Tim Tebow retired. I didn't even get to talk about Tim Tebow.
I know. We haven't even been able to talk about the Trevor Bauer drama of him going at that, Noah that Syndergaard.
Little,
and
that little.
Be careful. Don't get fired. Don't get fired.
I'm not kidding. I'm not saying what and what with what. We're none of that.
None of it. None of it.
None of it. I would never, never in a million years would I say any of that. But Jesus, that guy, get a life.
Yeah,
I can say get a life, right?
You can say get a life.
That is allowed.
That's allowed. Yeah, that's
he
allowed.
Needs to get a life. Yeah. He needs to find a new one.
Noah Syndergaard.
When he does his taxes this year.
Syndergaard buried him, by the way. Buried him. It was unbelievable. All right.
Yeah. Well, what was it? What was it? Bring your drone?
Yeah.
Something like that? Bring your drone.
And then,
incredible.
Then he took it too seriously, and Noah was like, come on, dude, relax.
Jesus. Oh, my God. Bauer stinks. He stinks. Ryan,
I know you're so happy.
I am, and I understand. How many times do we sit here on this podcast and say, like, yes, I get that Trevor Bauer technically makes the New York Mets a better team. It would have been impossible to root for him. He is an impossible figure to root for. He's got no redeeming quality. None. Because if he struck someone out and he did the Conor McGregor billionaire strut, I'd be like, I'm kind of rooting for the hitter to punch him in the face. Like, I really like the next inning he'd go out there. I'd be like, it actually would be poetic if Bauer got lit up for 5 runs this inning. And now the Mets aren't in a position to actually win the ball game. God bless him for getting his bag. Him going after Tatis for apparently not getting enough money. Tatis got $340 million.
Oh my God.
At some point, well, hold on. Just making money that you're not ever going to be able to spend.
Doesn't Tatis also have opt-outs?
No opt-outs.
Oh, no opt-outs? Okay.
Yeah.
Listen, I understand why he's saying that, because he could have made, quote-unquote, more money. Dude, if someone offered me $340 million tomorrow, I'd be like, okay.
Right, if someone offered me $340, forget about the rest of the decimal points.
Yeah.
Just $340, I'd be like, what do you need me to do?
Yeah.
No problem.
We'll figure it out.
I don't need more money. That's good money, $340.
You can do a lot with
that. That's my weekend of pony betting.
Yeah.
Because apparently there are races this weekend, and I need to bet them. I didn't even know.
Greggy Betts is back. Hey, GameStop's up today, so there you go.
I'm not in GameStop.
AMC, though. So.
I'm not an AMC anymore.
Oh, sorry.
I closed out. No, but Ryan, I made a lot of money.
Okay,
I don't need to.
Okay,
we're fine there.
We're okay.
My average stock price there was $264, and I sold it when it was around $9.
Not bad.
That's pretty good from what I have understood. He
stinks. All right. And we're
you know what else
here.
We didn't get to talk about?
What's that?
We didn't get to talk about my other boyfriend, Jared Klenick, who apparently is going to demand a trade because the Mariners are the stupidest organization to ever exist.
Yeah, that was real dumb, wasn't it? Real dumb. Incredible.
Is he going to demand
a trade for real, though?
I mean, he's not going to extend his stay in Seattle, is he?
I don't know. He's going to have to really get a sweet, sweet offer from them to do that.
His quote today when he was like, yeah, DePoto was apologizing to the entire team. He called it like it was someone farting in a quiet room. That's not exactly a ringing endorsement for your general manager at this point.
Was that his legit quote?
That was a direct quote. That's not me putting words in his mouth.
Oh, my God.
He said the apology sounded like a fart in a quiet room.
Yeah, never mind. He's not staying there. Okay. Well.
Come on back, baby. We'll give you Cano back. It's fine. We'll do trade backsies. You can even keep Justin Dunn. We don't need him back.
Klenick was number two on my draft list the year he was drafted. I was very, 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 very high on him.
Yeah, he went sixth in our draft.
Yes, I know. To you.
I picked fourth and took Joey Bart.
Yes.
And then I picked sixth and said, I guess I'll take Jared Klenick.
Makes sense. Anyway, he's going to be very good. We'll be back on Monday night. We'll be recording with a good friend of ours, and we'll save the spoiler for then, even though it's not really a hockey spoiler.
You're saving the spoiler because you don't know how to say your name.
What, Emma Vineland?
Are you sure that's how you say your last name?
Vineland? Probably. Whatever.
Yeah, 100%. You're messing it up.
Emma will yell at me, whatever. So Emma's going to come on with us. We'll talk more politics and bullshit. Talk more Artemi Panarin, hopefully not a 3-game lose streak. We'll be back then. Love you guys. Bye.